we're back, believe it or not. I have done two episodes, as I've promised. Thank you guys so much for hanging with me. I always appreciate you guys tuning in and listening. Today we're going to be talking about Samhain and its wonderful origins and some history and its many different names and how to celebrate. So for those of you who might not know, the wonderful word Samhain is often spelled S-A-M-H-A-I-N. So when I first started, I was calling it Samhain. This is a very common thing for many people to do. And there's actually a little meme of it over on the Facebook page of New Moon Mom about the first time you actually hear Samhain pronounced correctly, you have one of those, oh, moments. And I did too. So it's all good. Samhain has a lot of different names, like we said. It's Halloween, it's Kalangaive, or Nos Kalangaive, depending upon when you're celebrating it. And it's celebrated pretty much throughout the world these days. Originally, it was a Celtic holiday. It was part of one of four what's called fire festivals that mark the quarterly turning of the year. It is considered to be the time of year in which the veil is the thinnest, so it's the best time to commune with ancestors or fairy, to invite them into your home, to do divination, tarot cards, or scrying mirrors are also wonderful things to use around this time of year. And it's a great time to eat a lot of candy, I guess. So what I'd like to really delve into today is a lot of the, like we said, the history, the origin, how it came to be, what we celebrate now, what it was then, and some of the lost in translation moments that we might have happened throughout the years. So Samhain is celebrated it starts on October 30th, and it lasts until sundown on November 1st. So the Celtics and Irish pagan folk of all around, what they would do is they're celebrating what's the last harvest of the season. So they're gathering up the last of what their gardens have to offer, their fields, their livestock, all of that is gathered up, and they have a huge feast, a celebration of it, and they honor, or they are honoring, or they were honoring, what the earth had provided for them, what nature had given them for throughout the year, and in thanks and celebration of what was to be the dark half of the year. So a lot of what we celebrate now for Halloween, for Samhain, is based on fragmented history. So when the Celtic were invaded by the Romans, a lot of the knowledge and traditions and all of that was eradicated, erased by the Romans, or it was absorbed by the Romans. So you'll see a lot of crossover in our holidays. The next one coming up, Yule, is a huge example of that. It was considered the most significant of the four quarterly fire festivals, and it took place between the midpoint of the fall equinox and the winter solstice. And during this time, the hearth fires for family homes were left to burn out while the harvest was gathered. And after the harvest was gathered, they would have a huge, huge feast to, like I said, celebrate what had happened through the harvest season, to give thanks, and to also celebrate the ancestors, people who might have passed over throughout the year or had passed over in previous years. And that was a time to honor those lives that had been lost. It was also a time where the Celtic people would build temporary homes for warriors, for shamans who were visiting, and they would honor their visit as well. So they wanted to make sure that they had a lot to offer, so that's why it was the last harvest, everything was gathered and offered. After the work had been completed, they were joined by priests, and they would light what would be a huge wheel. And it was a symbolism of the turning of the wheel, of the celebration of the end of the light half of the year. So that wheel was lit on fire and rolled down a hill. And hopefully it ended up in a bonfire that would start the celebration. Sometimes, and this is where part of the history starts to get a little murky, cattle were sacrificed. and participants took a flame from the communal bonfire back to their home for to relight their hearth. So there were sacrifices that happened at this time. However, it's not like Michael Myers level of sacrifice and human, carnage. The early text of anything that we really have in regards to Samhain does show that it was, in some places, it was a mandatory 3-day celebration, that if you didn't show up and celebrate, there was going to be retribution from the gods. So, I mean, I don't know, if given the choice between going and having a party or staying home, I don't know, I guess I would go to the party. That was just me. So there was also the other part of this was that at Samhain in Ireland, anyone who had committed a crime or used their weapon during the celebration did face a sentence of death. So it was a peaceful time of celebration, of recognition for what had happened during the harvest season, of recognizing your ancestors. It was a time of peace. So any sacrifices or things like that were not done in malice. They were done, like I said, cattle were offered to appease the gods, things like that. So in conjunction with that, there were also offerings made to appease what they thought. So they thought during this time the veil was thinning and that spirits could cross over. So it wasn't just ancestors that they were worried that they thought would cross over. They were more, they had concerns about fae, monsters, creatures of darkness coming through as well. So they would leave offerings outside of their home to appease these entities. And they would, give offerings to the fae for protection or for to appease them. Some of the other things that they were kind of worried about at this time was a shapeshifter creature called the Pooka, which received harvest offerings from the field. So if you took something from the harvest, what you would do is you would leave some of that out to appease Pooka. They believe that Lady Gwen, who is a headless woman dressed in white, who would chase people who were wandering around at night without reason, and who was accompanied by a black pig. So that's definitely something that you would notice if you were wandering around alone by yourself at night. So heads up on that one. They also believe that the Duallana was something that appeared as an impish creature, sometimes a headless man on a horse who rode carrying his head. Sounds very familiar to us as well, the headless horseman. His horse was believed to have flaming red eyes, and his appearance was a death omen to anyone who saw him. And then what else? There was also a group of hunters known as fairy hosts who would kidnap people. Similar are the Slough, who came from the west to enter the houses and steal souls. So these were all things that these people had very founded fears in, and they would do the offerings and they would celebrate for 3 days and keep the fires lit to keep all of this away as they entered into the dark half of the year. All of those sort of traditions come from us from like the pre-Roman times, before medieval times, really. Once we get into the Middle Ages, the celebration still continued as a fire festival. Bonfires were held, and we start to see the appearance of jack-o'-lanterns. And the first jack-o'-lanterns were actually turnips. Sorry to burst that bubble, but they were small turnips that were attached by string or stick and embedded with coal. And they were believed as ways to keep evil spirits away and to guide good spirits back to your home. There were also more crazy traditions, like in Wales, men actually toss burning wood at each other in a violent game and they set off fireworks. In Northern England, men paraded around with noisemakers. Also, around this time, you start to see the evolution of what's called Dumb Supper. So, Dumb Supper is a tradition in which a complete meal is eaten in silence by and a plate is left out with food for the ancestors at the table. And for us, for me, what I do is one plate for all the ancestors. They can share. Sharing is caring, guys. So what would happen is in a traditional Dumb Supper, you would have the family gathered around, and before the supper began, you would have basically a conversation with the spirits, with your ancestors, about what had happened throughout the year, about updating them about all the new events and who said what about who. And children would play games to entertain the spirits. So things like anything like tag or chase, things like that. And then the meal was eaten in silence with, again, like I said, a plate left full of food for the ancestors. And then at night, the doors and windows would be left open so that the dead coming in and they would eat the food and then leave. So you don't want to trap any spirits in your house by not having a way for them to leave. For us, for me, for today, in these times, instead of leaving the food and the windows and doors open on what could be a very cold New England night, I leave it outside as an offering to the spirits and the fae that might be in the area, but also as an offering to the animals who might need to have that little bit of extra nutrition. So as we move on from the medieval times, we start to see Christianity start to step in regards to conversion from paganism to Christianity. And unfortunately, we start to lose a lot of our more of the history at this point. So people who were fearful of being found out as being pagan start to have more of a closed practice, and we don't learn as much. We do see that Christianity starts to gain a foothold in different communities, and church leaders are attempting to reframe Samhain as a Christian celebration. The first attempt was by Pope Boniface, I think I'm saying that right. Beautiful face? I don't think that works. But whatever, Boniface. In the 5th century, he moved the celebration to May 13th and specified it as a day celebrating saints and martyrs. The fire festivals of October and November, however, did not end with this decree. So we did hold on to some of that, and we did kind of mark it as our own. And then we see in the 9th century, Pope Gregory moved the celebration back to the time of the fire festivals, but declared it All Saints' Day on November 1st. All Souls Day would follow on November 2nd. So we see that all of a sudden, instead of, All Saints Day, and then we have All Souls Eve is now the new Halloween. And it's more acceptable in a Christian sense to celebrate these things without fear of prosecution if you are still pagan. Halloween that we see today with kids running around in masks and asking for treats and all of that really came about in the 19th century in America through Irish immigrants bringing their traditions across the ocean. Trick-or-treating is said to have been derived from the ancient Irish or Scottish practice of in the night leading up to Samhain. In Ireland, it was a practice of putting on a costume, going to door to door, and singing to the dead, and then cakes were given as payment. So we see that kind of continuing on as the Irish immigrants come over with probably a little less fear of persecution, a little more freedom to express themselves in their ancient ways, and sort of like a revival of this idea of, yes, let's celebrate this, let's go about our practices and reclaim some of this as our own. And I mean, seriously, who wouldn't like a night out with their kids getting treats and going door to door and singing? So we also have the Halloween pranks, you know, trick or treat, trick or treat. Throughout the ancient celebration, and normally these tricks, the trick part of it, were blamed on the fairies. So we kind of hold on to that idea of trick or treat, give me something sweet, or else, I guess, a little more ominous. But these days, the worst we have to worry about, I guess, is toilet paper being thrown at our homes. Worst case, maybe an egg. So have your candy ready. So then, if we're looking even closer to our timeline right now, in 1980s, there was this huge revival of Wicca and what that meant. So then we started getting people who were practicing Samhain through the New Age Wicca with traditional bonfire ceremonies and embracing the aspects of modern Halloween as well. So they would have a bonfire with treats and all of that stuff. And then also honoring nature and the ancestors. In the Druid tradition, you see Samhain celebrating more for the aspect of communing with the dead, of divination, of music, celebration, dance, and the witch's ball. So that's something that actually happens up in Salem, Massachusetts, still to this day. They have a witch's ball, and everyone gathers and celebrates the dead and celebrates the thinning of the veil, the start of the dark half of the year and all that funness. A little bit of debauchery in there too, not gonna lie. That's kind of like a really quick, brief history of what Samhain is and how it kind of came to be the modern day Halloween that we celebrate it right now. So I hope that was helpful for you. So the next thing I want to touch upon is some of the myths and magic and misconceptions that can happen around this time. And the first one I want to go into is sacrifices. Someone had posted something on a page that I am involved in about a Christian group or another religious group sort of talking about how witches sacrifice, how pagans or witches sacrifice children and would use their fat to create candles for Samhain. There's no written evidence of this ever happening. There's written evidence of cattle sacrifices happening. And the cattle, the livestock, was sacrificed to appease the gods. There is no record of satanic practices actually involved in Halloween whatsoever or in Samhain. The evidence that we have that relates any sort of satanic practice to Samhain was written by a man called Charles Valency. I hope I'm saying that right. He was a British military surveyor and amateur historian who first visited Ireland in 1762 while on a surveying mission. He became fascinated with the religion, and he wrote a massive 3-volume work on its history and culture. In the end, he claimed that Samhain was derived from... he had mistranslated the meaning of the word Samhain, and he, instead of it meaning what it does mean, which is summer's end, Valency argued that it actually referred to a Celtic god, alternately named Balsab. Bal meaning lord, and Sab meaning death. So a lot of people said, no, that's not right. But his writings still kind of perpetuated this myth of the Celtics celebrating a demonic god, Lord Samhain, who burnt human sacrifices and other barbaric things. Unfortunately, the Romans didn't help either, because they wrote down that the Celtics were bloodthirsty people who regularly had ritualistic sacrifices, but it's unclear whether or not there's any truth to these. None of these counts, nor the ancient Gaelic legends that we have, specifically mention sacrifices occurring during Samhain. So that's always something that we have to take with a grain of salt. That were there sacrifices? Yes, probably. Were they human sacrifices? At most resources, if not 99.9% of the resources, point to no, there were not. They were cattle or livestock. In truth, we really don't know much about how Samhain was celebrated in ancient Gaelic times. We do know that it was a harvest festival, as we mentioned. It's the third and final harvest festival for the harvest season. There were games, there were huge feasts, there were, on a spiritual level, it marked the thinning of the veil. It also, you know, they built the huge bonfires, they practiced divination, they conducted rites to keep ghouls at bay, like we talked about earlier. But since they didn't keep written records, many of these practices remain shrouded in mystery. And it is something that we do need to be aware of, that we can claim, no, these things never happened, but we don't know 100%. There is no written evidence that sacrifices, human sacrifices, were ever part of the Samhain tradition. So let's not do that. So then if we're moving on to more of the magic aspect of it, what we're looking at is the thinning of the veil for Samhain. It's a really amazing time to do some connection work with ancestors. It's an amazing time to do some shadow work to get ready for that dark half of the year. I talk about shadow work a lot. It's really, really an intricate part of your practice. I think all too often people ignore the shadow work because we all want to be, you know, laugh, life, live, love, whatever all that saying is. I'm more coffee, caffeine, and crystals. But hey, to each his own. As we are practitioners of the craft, we cannot ignore shadow work. We cannot say that it is simply something that we'll do later. It's an intricate part of our work for us to have balance. We talk about balance all the time in our practice and about how this is now going to be the dark half of the year. Well, we can't have the dark half of the year without the light half of the year, and we can't have the light half of the year without the dark half of the year, and we need to celebrate both equally. Does that mean that we need to shut ourselves in and be all mopey-dopey? Nope, not at all. It means that we need to be open to accepting our faults and our failures and our shortcomings and recognizing them and saying, yes, this is something, this is part of me, and I'm going to work on it or I'm going to embrace it. One of the two, no wrong answers. And like we said, as we get to, you know, the All Hallows Eve and the thinning of the veil, what we're looking at is that dark half, that opening of the veil for us to really go back, to really look at our roots, to really see where we came from and reassert that connection. Because even though someone's passed away, it doesn't mean that they're gone. They live with us in stories, in pictures, in memories. They live with us. Every time I look at my kids, I think, oh my God, there's my dad. You know, or I think, oh, you know, that's something that my uncle would do that's so funny. Or, you know, all those things that we have connections to, they live on with each generation. And this is a wonderful time for us to sit and reflect and tell stories and honor them and really bring them up and talk to our children about them and how much they meant to us and how much they mean to them as well. Someone asked me a really great question. How do you connect with ancestors that you might not know? And I think that that's something that touches home with a lot of us. You know, maybe you were adopted and you don't know your exact lineage. Maybe you've lost contact with part of your family, but you want to still honor those who have passed. Maybe you're just out in the world and you don't feel tethered to anything in particular. And that's, you know, we're all coming from different walks and we're all coming from different points and we've all coming from different experiences. And each one is valid. Each journey is amazing and beautiful and should be honored in its own right. So let's look at that. Let's say that you don't have a connection with your ancestors. Well, you do. You're a person, you're breathing, you're living, you came from somewhere. So my two suggestions, and they sort of run into each other, are seek out a valid certified medium. Seek out someone who has experience, a long history of mediumship. As I work with some mediums, and they're amazing people to just touch base with and talk to. And sometimes weird things pop up, and you're just like, okay, well, let me do some research on that. Like, for instance, I had an experience with a medium who asked me if I had a member of my family who had passed away in the 80s through suffocation. And I had to, you know, do some research and say, yes, I did. And it kind of opened up that track for me to do some research on that person and what happened and have a better connection with them. And also, you know, you have to be open to that, you know, they might not be the ancestors that you're looking for, but they are your ancestors. So having that openness of who you are and where you came from. The other suggestion that I have is, aside from a medium, is doing a genealogical test. I did one a few years back just to kind of understand who I was a little bit better. And I have always rooted myself in being, I'm an Irish lass. I'm short, I'm stocky, I got it. I'm Irish. Turns out I'm also Spanish, and I don't know what that is. I don't know where that came from, so that's something that I'm going to do some research on. And, you know, I'm going to look at my family tree, and I'm going to deep dive into that and see who these ancestors were and how they might be affecting me down the line. And, you know, writing out my tree, writing out my ancestors and researching them, that's the best way that you can start to really have that connection with them. And if you don't have those resources available to you, you can also create sort of like a blanket altar for lost or forgotten ancestors. This is a phrase that popped up a few times. There was a book that was recommended in an article I was reading called The Mighty Dead by Christopher Penzack. And I'll put a link to that in the show notes as well. That might be a great resource for you to start with if you're not familiar with your ancestors. And also on accepting the fact that there's more than just blood ancestors. There's also companion ancestors, and there's hero ancestors, and there's spiritual ancestors. And this is all written out by Arwen over on Patheon. And I'll put a link to that as well. The more resources you guys can have about this stuff, the better off I feel that you will be. So Matt writes down that there are blood ancestors, which are obviously people that you are genetically related to who have passed away. There are companion ancestors, who are people that maybe they weren't your blood relatives, maybe they were your adopted family, maybe they were a really dear friend. There are hero ancestors, which I found really interesting, and those are people that are not genetically or familiarly related to you. They are people who, like, let's say you're an author and you really resonate with Edgar Allan Poe. He might be a hero ancestor for you, someone that you connect to on that level. So if you're an artist and you love Impressionism, maybe Monet is your hero ancestor. And then we also have spiritual ancestors, and those are people who have taught or inspired you spiritually. So along your path, you might have people of great recognition who have helped cultivate your craft, who have helped really bring forth knowledge in the path that you're walking, and those would be your spiritual ancestors. So that gives you a little more of a variety of people that you might be able to work with if you don't know where to begin. And now comes my favorite part, different ways to celebrate Samhain or Calangaif or Nos Calangaif as we enter into the season. I have heard it in like 5 minutes. Where did October go? I was so worried about like summer and all. Now I'm like, oh my gosh, fall is rushing by. So one of the ways that we talked about earlier, turnip carving, jack-o'-lanterns, things like that, later on in Ireland became pumpkin carving. So we always carve pumpkins. And I have a lovely story that I love to share with people about Samhain, Calangaif. I'm just going to call it Calangaif because that's what I call it in my tradition. So on Calangaif, we carve pumpkins, and I set 2 pumpkins out for my kids, and I let them have knives, and they think it's the best night ever because they get to hack away at a pumpkin. And so we do it to create a welcoming symbol for our ancestors to know that our door is figuratively open. It gets very cold here at night in New England in October, so we don't actually leave the doors open. We might leave a window cracked, though, one in the front of the house and one in the back so the spirits can pass through. And as my sons were carving their pumpkins, my youngest son handed me the knife and said, "Mommy, can you make a sail, the thing on the boat?" And I said, "Sure, like you're carving a sail?" And he goes, "Yeah, I want to carve one for the man who has the boat." And I stopped in my tracks because my father, who passed away when I was much younger, has a sailboat on his grave. And my children have never been there and they've never seen it. But my son felt drawn to carve a sailboat into his pumpkin for that year. So it was really a wonderful way to let me know that the ancestors were with us, that they were communing with us, and that it was something that I know that my children could share with me. So I highly recommend carving pumpkins, but also allowing your children the freedom to carve what they feel drawn to on them. Like I said earlier, we also leave out offerings. We do a dumb supper of some sort. Sometimes it's just me sitting at the table in pure exhaustion at the end of the day, and that's okay. So what I'll do is I'll set out a table. We'll set the table. We'll put out our dinner, and we'll leave a special plate for our ancestors, and on that we will put a small sampling of everything that we are eating, and we'll also make sure that there is some sort of treat, some sort of cake, dessert thing to offer for the spirits, for the fae, for the ghouls or whatnot that might be around us that night. Aside from the dumb supper offering, we might also leave out a special offering of what's called soul cakes. Those are simple cakes that you can make quite easily. They're almost like shortbread cookies that you can leave out for your spirits. And in that offering, we might include some herbs that are connected with psychic ability, like calendula or something for health and healing, peppermint, lavender, things like that, that we want to offer the spirits so that they are healthy, they are healing, they are communing with us if they feel the need. And then we also sort of spruce up our family altar. So I think I've mentioned this before. We have a few different altars in our home. We have our family altar, we have our ancestor altar, and we have our private altar. The private altar is in our bedroom for me and my husband. The family altar is one that has collected different nature-based things from our travel, feathers, rocks, things of that we feel drawn to that we take home with us to remember what we do as a family and all of that. And then we have our ancestor altar, and that is up year round, but it always gets a sprucing around this time. And then we add photos of people that we've lost. This year we do have a few photos that we need to add in. But it's so this is what it comes up to. We have this ancestor altar, and as we lose people, we have this sorrow, this sadness, this heaviness that comes about when it happens. And then at this time of year, we take a moment and we really honor their lives, and we celebrate them in joy. And it's not like a re-grieving of them, it's a celebration. It's a thanking them for their influence in our lives and a remembrance of them throughout the year going forward. So we'll be adding in some new photos this year for those that we've lost. And my kids like to make little, we make like miniature offerings to them. So one year we made my grandmother is on our altar, and she was an English woman, and I'm not exactly sure how she'd feel about me having her on our pagan altar, but we do have her up there because I loved her, and I do love her. But she was from England, so she always had tea and cookies. So I made a little tiny teacup out of air dry clay, and that's on the altar to represent her and her love of tea and a special moment bonding time that we had together as a family. So things like that are always easy to do. And I'm trying to think if there's anything else, carving pumpkins, dressing up, decorating your home, celebrating the harvest, anything that has to do with harvesty things, wheat, anything that was grown in the field that you can bring in and celebrate. Last of the flowers to dry and offer up on your altars, creating custom blended incense for Kalangai is also a really great idea. I'll see if I can put up a little recipe for a simple incense blend that you can put together. And then just snuggling in by a fireplace and getting ready for the dark half of the year, and it's my favorite time. Cozy slippers and bonfires and all the yummy good foods that come with it. Pumpkin spice, all the things. If there's any questions, anything that I can help you guys with in regards to how to celebrate Samhain or Kalangai, please feel free to drop a note either on the Facebook page or anywhere you find me. And with that, I will say thank you for joining me. And as I say to my kids before I send them out into the world, be awesome, be good, be kind. Take care, guys. Until next time.